This is Wade Rathke, the Chief Organizer Report. The beat goes on, but the Ecuadorian economy is reeling. I had not visited Ecuador for 3 years. I sat for hours in the sparkling new airport that opened after my last visit, or more specifically in the airport center, across the street from the actual ticket counter, security gates, and airplanes. If modern airports have become shopping malls serviced by airplanes and runways, Quito has essentially built a mall across the walkway from the airport. There's a patio, there are plenty of chairs and free Wi-Fi. There are many worse places in the wide world to spend hours waiting for a plane. Walking through the main streets of the city near our hotel, not far from the major park and botanical garden, everything seemed clean and well-ordered. Coffee shops were active, and on the streets, people bustled along in well-turned sport coats or high heels and big leather purses. Talking to friends, colleagues, and organizers we had worked with on campaigns either in the U.S. or Ecuador or both, a more unsettling picture emerges. This is not Venezuela, where food riots have become almost daily occurrences and political and social unrest is intense. But nonetheless, Ecuador at all levels is feeling the pain. One former political activist we knew well from our work on field operations in the last presidential campaign in Ecuador, in describing the impact of the falling price of oil, remarked that 60% of the national budget was derived from oil revenues, and even as the price moves towards the $50 per barrel mark, that is essentially break even in the U.S., Ecuador needs the price to hit $60 to $70 per barrel because of the extra cost of bringing the crude to the market. An organizer I'd worked with at Casa de Marilyn, back home now and working at a governmental ministry, told us this year the budget of her department had been cut from $20 million to $6 million. Needless to say, the impact was devastating and the layoff severe. She was surprised to still have a job. Many don't. An activist we knew is now living at home. Her brother had lost his job with the state, and her sister in another job had had her hours cut in half. An old friend, comrade, and former organizer who'd worked with us in Florida on our Walmart campaigns a decade ago, told me when he responded to my email and arranged to meet us for breakfast at the hotel, he would do his best to make it because he was so busy. When we met, I asked him what kind of jobs he was handling now that were keeping him so busy. None, came the surprising answer from my well-connected friend. He was hustling just to keep above water. A job in another country had mysteriously fallen through a week before. When I asked after his father, an elegant and sophisticated gentleman who I admired and knew well and would have thought traveled smoothly in the upper class of the country, I learned he was also now unemployed and in danger of losing his home. I worried that our members, many of whom depended on the bono or basic cash welfare assistance that President Carrera had raised unilaterally in the previous political campaign, might have seen that cut back too. The answer from everyone we talked to was not yet, which was hardly reassuring. Higher oil prices had led to more robust economic projects, expanded public programs and public employment, and increased debt for Ecuador, both externally and internally. Like any bubble of sorts, the country, like Venezuela and smaller states like Louisiana, was caught still standing when the music stopped and everyone raced for a chair. After the encouraging gains in many Andean countries, where recent economic growth in Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia had lifted education, citizen wealth, health, and living standards, one gets the sense that this is unraveling in a case study of what globalization gives and then takes away. We met with two young doctors. They were originally from Honduras, but had trained for 7 years in the vaunted Cuban healthcare system. They wanted to practice in rural areas where the need was greatest, but Honduras had no government program to support their work, so they ended up in Ecuador, about 4 hours by bus from Quito. I asked them to rank the healthcare systems they knew and how the economic situation was impacting healthcare. Not surprisingly, so the three, Cuba was first, Honduras last, and Ecuador in between. As for the economy, they were still getting paid, so at least that was something they said, but they could already see shortages starting to show up in medical supplies. Being forced to root for the price of a barrel of oil to go up just about says it all when we look at the unsustainable economy we have built in this world. This is Wade Rathke. For questions or comments, www.chieforganizer.org. You take it from here to there.